One of the top challenges for people seeking employment and education is access to reliable transportation. That's why Well-Built Bikes refurbishes donated bicycles and provides them to struggling community members. If you have an old or unused bike that you can donate to their cause, it could provide mobility and independence to someone who can't afford a car or a brand new bike of their own. Visit BikeShopTampa.com to learn more, or swing by the Well-Built Bike store in the University Mall on Fowler Avenue.
All right, well, welcome once again to another Work Ethic Podcast, and this is a long overdue episode. I'm here with Mauro Costa from Bulky Trade, and me and his brother sat down not too long ago, and we recorded, what, half an episode?
Yeah, we did.
Only to find out that the damn thing wasn't recording, and so we're doing a take two. Now, luckily, I don't have the greatest memory, and we didn't have a recording of it, and it's been a minute since we were able to circle back, so... Yeah. Dude, thank you so much for making time again to share your story again. I felt like a total dodo bird. That had never happened to me before. But my man handled it like a champ, just laughed it off, and here we are. So why don't I just throw you the ball? Why don't you just introduce yourself to everyone, and we'll just wrap from there.
Yeah, well, actually, I think this is a better take because this time around we are...
In person.
Right? Yeah, the first time we tried this was over Zoom. So, my name is Mauro Costa. That's the Portuguese pronunciation of my name. Born in Angola, Southwest Africa. I left when I was about 12. Lived in Europe for some time. Portugal, beautiful country. And then I moved to the States in 2000, and I've been pretty much here since. There was a period of time that I went back home for about 2-3 years, actually 3 years. But my family stayed back, and I came back as well after a while because, you know, home is where your heart is. And my wife and kids were back here, so I came back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, tell, I guess give us a little bit of a sketch of your, like, kind of the, your company, kind of what your work is, what you work on. Give us a little bit of the professional profile.
Absolutely. What I'm working on, I've been working on, to be quite honest with you, for quite some time. We're putting together a tech solution. I'm a non-technical founder, right? But, I mean, think of that. Crazy guy. I'm putting together a marketplace, a web platform that it's connecting supply and demand in the food and beverage space. What we're doing in a nutshell is we're connecting emerging food and beverage brands with retail distribution on an international level. Mm. So right now we're actually starting by taking American brands out into regions in Africa, Middle East, and Asia. Mm. How I got started, to be honest with you, I've been doing international trade quite briefly since 2008. Started out doing after Wall Street, when I graduated from, when I finished college, I went to work on Wall Street. And after Wall Street, I created my first company in 2008, where we were exporting heavy equipment. Couple of years after that, focused the business in foods. And that's how I landed on the marketplace that we are working on, because when I started with foods, I was buying products from distributors, from big companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, you name it. But I realized that I was a nobody because I had no direct relationship with the supply, with the manufacturers per se, right? And I figured that that model was not scalable. So took me a while to realize, to conceptualize the model, the business model as we are today. But the idea was to figure out a solution that new and upcoming entrepreneurs that are putting their sweat and tears behind their brands actually have a shot on international distribution. So that's what Bulky Trade is in a very, very nutshell. Yeah, it's a passion. It's a passion of mine. Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Man, that's awesome. So, okay, let's go. I mean, you mentioned a little bit through college and this and that, but let's go all the way back. If you mind entertaining this again, I know. But, like, take me back to kind of your earliest memories of, let's say, like, when the concept work started to take on meaning in your life. So, earliest memories of work.
Earliest memories of work. Wow, yes, great. That's a great question. And, again, revisiting the little bit of conversation we had then, it started out basically as, I'm the youngest of four siblings, right? My mom and my dad, as far as I remember, my mom worked until a certain period of my early years. I can't remember how old I was when my mom stopped working, but I remember going to her with her to her office or work after school, right, and just hanging around.
What did mom do?
My mom was an X-ray specialist, right? Okay. A technician, yep. Let's say. And this was early 80s, right?
Okay.
Back home in Africa. My dad, on the other end, was a bank worker, basically, and he actually grew with the position, basically. He basically progressed with the company, and then he started out at some point working a director for the international division, international payments division, right, of the bank that was in charge of making payments for the country to import any kinds of goods, right. So, and actually because of that position, my dad was given the opportunity. Every 2 years, we had this international fair. We had this fair. They would bring international businesses into the country,
yep,
showing up everything that is innovation in areas of not only food, but agriculture equipment, medical field. And we were one of the lucky ones because this was like for a whole week. It was like a big event in a capital city. And I was one of the, my siblings and I, we were lucky enough to get tickets to go every 2 years to go to these fairs. And we used to interact, of course, with a lot of business people that had interest in dealing directly with my dad because of what he did. So I started out interacting with them, not realizing that at some point I was, years later,
yeah,
I was going to be kind of like in their shoes because now that's what I do. I go to shows as well.
Now, how old were you at that point?
I remember let me put it this way. As far back as I can remember, I was probably 5-6 years old when I started, probably a little bit younger when I was starting to get exposed to that.
Yeah.
And then I left when I was 12 and I ventured on my own it just took a completely different experience because at that point, you know, it was not necessarily on the business side, but my mom and my dad came to the realization that for us to grow, they needed to ship us outside of the country. And then me and my siblings were also, again, one of the lucky ones that we got to go to Europe. So at that point, the venture was more like the independency actually came with the at that time that my parents had to ship us abroad.
So you were 12 years old. They sent you to Europe. This is for education.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So tell me a little bit about that experience.
Funny or not, but and I do I do understand that sometimes the term may be a little bit different, right? Here, I went to a Catholic boarding school.
Okay.
That was only it was only co-ed during the day, right? But during the internal students, which were a bunch of us from Africa, and not only that, I mean, we actually had colleagues whose parents were Portuguese immigrants in other countries, that they shipped their kids to this boarding school in Portugal. It was very famous, and it was only male on the boarding school per se, right?
Of course.
But I started out at that point realizing that I started showing my desire to break away from the norms. Meaning, I got to a point where my siblings and my parents gave us the opportunity to, hey, now you don't have to live in the boarding school anymore. If you guys want, we have, they've rented a place back in the city, back in the capital, Lisbon, where me and my siblings could go live. But I decided to stay back because I had developed a network of friends and of local contacts that I was having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So I could have after 2 years of boarding school, I could have decided to abandon it, but I decided to stay back and enjoy and finish the rest of my high school.
Okay.
Because I was having so much. I was not only, of course, I was studying. I was a very great student. I took the liberty, and I guess I started to dare and doing things that I probably would shy away if I was with my siblings. Mm. Meaning, I started attending fashion shows, like just organizing them, right? With my friend, yes, yeah, with the school. I was part of the student body, not the president, but I was part of it.
Yep.
I became MC at for raves for rave parties.
That's amazing.
I was having a lot of
fun. How old were you throwing raves?
Wow, I wasn't necessarily throwing them, but I was being part of the.
Sure.
But I was. This was my 17, 18 year olds, maybe less than that.
Okay.
Maybe less than that. Yeah, I was having a lot of fun in Portugal. Yeah. Yeah, so that was the period that I think I started realizing that I'm an independent kind of guy. I was an independent kind of guy, and I've always wanted to, you know, well, I've always then followed that path. My transition to the U.S. was also because I finished my high school, boarding school, right, which was my high school, and I was always looking for what is the next step, what is my next move. So yeah,
and you came to the U.S. at 18.
I was actually 21.
Okay.
At that point, because I finished when I graduated when I graduated high school, and then I started college in Portugal.
Okay.
I attended 2 years of college studying economics at that point, and I finished my sophomore year. But I never liked it. I never liked the economics much. Well, I never liked the education system in Portugal, and I've always wanted to come over to the States because I had some good friends here. They were telling me all how, you know, all the good things about the system here, and I was lucky that I was able to convince my parents that they were putting the effort. Actually, back home, they found me a very small scholarship that only paid for like probably 30% of my annual expenses. But my dad and my mom and my dad, they, you know, they did everything they could, and they actually said, you know what, yeah, maybe that's not a bad idea. I was the first one to actually venture out of their nest that, you know, basically on such of a away kind of a scenario. But yeah, I've always wanted to come to the States, so they sent me over. They allowed me to.
Can you remember? So interesting. Well, let's just, because there's a couple different country transitions there, like as you go to Europe and then the United States. Like, I just want to like double click on the experience of going to different cultures and places. Yep. I mean, this is a huge, I would imagine, a huge part of your own like story and your own development. Like, how, I don't know, from your own temperament and how you encounter these places. Yep. Like, how did that, you know, how did you compare and contrast those? Like, how did culture shock? Like, yep. Talk to me about that experience.
It was extremely, I'm not going to say difficult, but challenging, right? Growing up in Europe, you know, at a young age, you start doing adult stuff, meaning you have a lot of liberties that you are not necessarily allowed to experiment when you are here in the States, right? To be full disclosure, I mean, having a beer, mm-hmm. right? At 16-year-old, yeah, I was going to clubs with friends, my oldest sibling. And when I came here to the States, I had to adjust to that. Basically, I had to, because I was not 21 yet. I couldn't go, right? Or I I did not know the system as much. I mean, I knew a little bit of the I kind of studied the language when I was in high school. That's where I started it, but I realized that I still needed to learn a lot more just to get by. So there was an adjustment period. I was never shy away, but I knew that, boy, if I really want to, you know, go and do things the normal way, I have to, as much as possible, learn the language.
Yeah.
Learn the not only learn the language, but learn the culture, learn the habits, what's right, what's wrong, what's acceptable, what's not. The food is completely different, right? And then again, I mean, you come with a lot of realities, or I will say, you come with a lot of granted yeses that when you come to the States, I mean, when you come to the U.S., you have to adjust. And I had to do that a lot because, you know, and I came, and the other thing is, when I moved here, school-wise, because I went to study English,
mm-hmm.
I came out of a sophomore year in high school. I mean, at a university in Portugal, and I came to a system that it was an international student school, right? Basically, which was completely, basically segregated or separated from the university in Philly, right? At Drexel, basically, that's the school that I went, okay. Right? So I was used to normally hang out with college kids, and I came here and I had to realize that, well, you're not a college kid, actually, right? So you're still a degree below because you are here learning English. So there's a couple of things that you can't do, right? There's a couple of places you can't go because you are not a university student yet. You are still only learning English, right? So it was an adjustment. And then again, you know, I was almost close to turning 21, and I knew that the legal age here was 21. So it was a little bit of a adjustment period for me to, you know what, okay, let me take a step back. I've been here for a couple months. Let me just learn the system.
Yeah, it sounds like that's a lot of rules. This is a lot of rules here.
Yeah. In retrospect, I get it. I definitely do. But it's the fact that when you come in with a preconceived mind or preconceived ideas of, you know, when it's normal to you, and you have to butt heads with, or you have to confront with a different system, either you shock, either you clash, or you or you actually take a step back and, you know what, let me learn.
Yeah.
And I decided to learn.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people, there are people that I know that it was not for them.
Yeah.
You know, it was not for them. They decided that, you know what, yeah, no, good, I've done my 3 months of English, done my 6 months of English, and I'm out. But that was never my intention. So I've always wanted to play the long game, and so yeah. So
now you talked about doing 2 years of economics before coming here,
yeah,
right? And then, but you said, you know, I wasn't crazy about two things. You said the system, and so you were wanting to try the U.S. Kind of, you'd heard some things about the system here. Well, it sounds like that was a bit of an adjustment.
Yeah.
And then you come and go, oh, first I got to do this English stuff for a while. But then also you said, you know, you kind of implied like economics wasn't necessarily the thing that you were going to stick it out. So like, so what ends up happening then? Like, where do you go with your education at that point?
Great point. Yeah, I definitely came here. I gave econ another 3 months. Well, when I came here, to be honest with you, this is the process that I had to do was, My English level was good enough that I could have spent 3 months just studying English and got into and then applied to go to a community college.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to, again, this goes back to my approach of learning the system as much as I could. Instead of taking just 3 months worth of English, I decided to stay for another term. So I took 6 months of English to be able to when I was ready to make the transition. You know, I didn't want to struggle with the language at all. So
yeah, that makes sense.
I decided then, and I went to a community college to complete some intro courses at a much, I quickly realized that it was going to be to my financial advantage, especially because I was trying to, I had to, you know, muscle around what my parents would able to support me and how much. So I found the solution that attending a community college was, and not transitioning immediately, getting immediately into college, was more financial advantageous for me and my family. So I did that in conjunction with my parents. Of course, I told them, hey, I have a solution. I can save some money instead of going straight to college. Instead of going to a four-year college right away. So I did that. And I did give econ another shot, meaning I was trying to understand, is this really what I want? It was just the Portuguese system of teaching,
okay,
or is it really the subject that is totally not of interest to me? It's not resonating with me, right? And I realized that yes, it was the subject that econ was, because it's so theoretical that it is. So I mean, it's a lot of reading you gotta do, right? It's by the books. It's not my nature.
Mm.
And I quickly realized that, you know what? I gotta find what my next move is. I had studied a little bit of accounting when I was in high school, and I decided to experiment within, you know, I'm not gonna do finance. I mean, I'm not gonna do econ. Let me try between accounting and finance to see which ones I actually like most. Because of my past learnings of accounting, it was easy to me. Yeah, I knew the basics, just a different language, but pretty much the same thing, you know. It's just a different classification of accounts, but pretty much the same. But again, it's all one and two, one and two, one and two, right? And I've always loved Wall Street anyways. I've always loved to watch, even when I was in Portugal, the stock market. Mm. After a couple of months, taking a few courses here and there that were going to either allow me to pursue accounting or venture into finance, I totally decided to, you know what, I'm going to do finance.
So, okay, so just to make sure I'm following, so because, you know, I don't know, for me, maybe for a lot of people listening, you hear economics, finance, you go, well, what's the difference? What's the difference, yeah. Right? So, right. So economics is broad theoretical kind of macro themes of like how the economy
yep.
works, inputs, outputs, whatever. Whereas accounting or let's say finance is more the practical tools. Like, so as you reference Wall Street, is this, I don't know if there's a clear way to illustrate it, but like that, is that a fair way to say like, this is where the differentiation is? Cause you're still, I mean, is that a heavier math subject or are they both pretty mathematical?
From my perspective, from my understanding, finance gives you the ability to be more creative because you can actually be hands-on and play around with the tools at your disposal.
Yep.
Econ stays pretty much in one lane. It is what it is. I mean, it is supply and demand. Yeah, and the law of supply and demand, it's always the law of supply and demand, right? Mm. It will never change in terms of, well, the concept itself never changes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, with finance, you can be completely creative in as to how you apply it, how you, what do you touch, how you touch,
yeah.
right? Look at an income statement, right? For instance, right?
Yep.
I mean, shifting money from assets to liabilities, depending on what you need to actually, what the impact that you want to be on the company,
yep.
right? You have to be creative on, well, you have to be, it gives you the ability to be creative, right? Even just moving classes within assets, right?
Okay.
You know, instead of keeping money in cash, you can actually invest a little bit, right? It's still an asset, right? And gives you the ability to even grow that money a little bit more, right? And it gives you the freedom to understand, okay, there's ways that I can play around with the teachings of the subject, right? That I don't have the same ability when it comes to economics, and I felt that economics was putting me in a box because it was too by the book, pretty much. It is A or B. It is one lane, and I never liked it that way.
Mm.
I never liked it that way. But don't get me wrong; great concepts. Till this day, I apply them based on what I do.
Yeah,
I have to understand how any shift on policy, right, impacts not only the local economy that we are,
yep.
but how is that going to resonate with the international economies that I do business with?
Yeah, it makes sense. It seems like because the finance exists within the economic environment, right? So
yep.
like,
yep.
as I'm listening, what I keep thinking of is like, so over the last few years during COVID, there was like environmental challenges to businesses. A lot of that was economics. A lot of that was lockdowns or whatever. There was, and so then that's, let's say, outside of our control as business owners.
Yeah.
But then, like, what I do with my inventory,
exactly.
or my staff or my payroll,
yep.
is an internal control that I have,
yep.
which is a finance decision
which
that
is
I'm
a finance
making
decision. There you
in
go.
in the environment that is the changing economy.
Exactly right. I
yep.
mean, there's the economic factors are a given, right?
Yep.
The economic condition that you are in are. You barely have any direct control.
It has its way with you.
It has its way. Yes.
It is a power
yes,
greater.
Exactly.
This is the invisible hand of the. Yeah, right. It's like it is a. We talk about it like a god, even
yes.
because it is a power greater than
it
us.
Is.
Yeah.
It is. But how do you navigate it? Right. How you navigate your economic situation depends on what are some of the financial decisions that you make, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the creativity that finance was, that's the creativity that actually enticed me.
See, this makes a lot of sense to me, because it would, like, out of the two, so I'm like, probably not, those probably wouldn't be the fields I'd be picking between, but given that layout and why I'm pressing to go, I want to understand this, is to go, well, I have zero interest in topics that are completely outside of my control, because, I mean, it's like, that's interesting and all.
Right.
But, like, I'm trying to operate something. I'm trying to build something and do something. And you have, even as you're, like, launching companies and building businesses, it's like that entrepreneurial DNA in you is like, no, I am interested in making moves. And so talk to me about, like, now you make that change. You change your education. And then, I mean, it's a bit of a leap forward, I guess, to where you end up, you know, it's what, much later, like 2008, you said you started your first company.
Yeah.
But, like, take us on the journey a little bit, like, from the major switch to, like, how, you know, but it, I think that even it sounds like that decision is almost a decision to go, I'm going to build things.
I tell you what, I remember to this day, believe it or not, it may sound cliche or it may sound made up or not. I remember that at some point I was at a finance class earlier. It was, I think it was the earliest finance courses that I've taken at Drexel. I was probably in my sophomore year, right after moving from community college to, it was between my sophomore and my junior year, right? I remember that teacher assistant surveyed the class as to, hey, tell us what you guys want to do, everybody, right?
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I remember this day, till this day, that my answer to the class was, I'm either going to have my political party in my country, or I'm going to have my own business. That was totally me dreaming. Anyways, I had no idea. I decided that, yeah, I love politics. I do. I live and breathe politics. I don't watch it as much now, especially because I'm so, in the past year, probably 2 years, that I've been so focused on building the company.
Head down, yeah.
But you know what? Out of that statement, I realized that, you know what? No. Someday I'm going to have my own company. I just didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
I graduated from Drexel. And again, my passion was really, you know what? I'm going to be a Wall Street broker. And I did pursue, and I got my Series 7, my 63. I got the license. And I was able to... to a transition, I moved to Orlando with my wife. We had one of our sons. Actually, two. Actually, we had our second boy, and we decided that at some point, when I was done with college, we were going to move to Florida. And actually, when we did that, I found a brokerage company out of close to Orlando. That's where we were living at the time, and that's where I got my initiation as a stockbroker.
Okay.
But I soon realized at that point I was an international student. I had just came out of college, and I had an OPT, which is a temporary work permit that was only good for 1 year. So I realized that the company in Florida, this brokerage company, was not going to sponsor me to get a visa, because it was never on their policies. Mm. So I quickly had to find a different solution. I was there for 2 months. I realized that. So I found a solution in New York. Mm. And again, I've always loved New York. I've always wanted to go there. My wife never wanted to live there, but I took the time. Well, and I went to New York for about a year or so. And I was a stockbroker at a boiler room kind of style shop.
On Wall Street.
Well, it was on Long Island, actually.
Sure.
But that's what we were selling. We were selling aggressively. Well, we were actively selling stock, basically. I remember I was living. I was lucky enough that I had uncle that was living in New York. So I was living with them in Manhattan, and I used to commute.
Your family's still here?
Oh, they're gone. My family, my wife and kids, they're here. Yes.
I went there. In Orlando, okay.
Yes, I went there by myself.
Yep.
I went there by myself. And I was commuting from Manhattan to Long Island the other way around. I used to wake up 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30, to be in the office at 7. And it was heavily phone work until 8, 9 o'clock at night. And I would get back, I would get back to Manhattan around 10, 10:30. Probably grab a quick bite when I could, go to bed, and do it again. So I did that for about a year and a few months. My wife stayed back home here. She was never happy with the fact that I was away.
Of course.
So she kind of forced me. It's either us or New York. So I came back.
Smart man.
Yes.
No. Now, were you there long enough to figure out the work visa thing? Was that?
No.
No. Okay.
No. The firm got into some, basically, I got duped.
Okay. Right?
I got duped. I went out of status for a while.
You did?
I did. Okay. I went out of status for a while. My wife, we were in the process. We were not yet married.
At that time.
But we got married afterwards. But she was going through a divorce. There was a period that she was going through a divorce, so we had to wait for hours to actually take place.
Yep.
Right? So for a period of time, yes, I was out of status. And only then, after four years maybe, that's when my legal status adjusted into a green card then. And this was late 2009, maybe? Late 2009, around that time. Yeah.
And that's because from getting married.
Yes.
Yeah.
Getting married. Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. We had actually been together for longer than that. We had been together actually since I got here in 2000. I mean, she got divorced. She broke her marriage around that time in 2000. That's when we actually got to know each other. Got to reunite, because there's actually a completely different story how we actually know each other, because she's also from my home country of Angola.
Yep, nice.
Exactly. But it took a while. You know, I was in school. We were not worried about that. I was in school. I had my visa. She was, you know, doing her thing. We got our first kid. Yeah, we were good. Only then when I needed to figure out that, hey, I'm about to graduate and you're still married. This thing's gonna take some time. So yeah, it took a while. But we, you know, it was good because
they have been long separated, but never like did the paperwork.
Never did the paperwork. Oh, yes, for years. We were, I when I reunited with her, when I connected with her, we got together. She was no longer married together with him.
Then.
But yes, then. Wow. But yeah, it took a while, you know. We were just enjoying. We were having fun, me and her.
Yeah.
You know, and the kids, we were doing our lives, but
it's a non-issue.
Yeah. It was a non-issue until it became an issue. Right.
We need to handle that.
We got
to
get, yeah. But then again, we did. And at the time, we were already here and we had moved to Florida. So it took us some time because she had to go back and she had to submit her divorce in Pennsylvania. So it took us a while actually to figure out the process, but we did it. I mean, it took us about another year or so for her to actually get it done. And there were some things that the state needed it in Philadelphia to show that they were not married anymore. That's why it took us longer. But then again, when we navigated that thing, I had already created my first company after getting out of Wall Street, after
her demand, right? That I.
So you come back down here. I came down here. When you got here, that's when you launched your first company.
Yes. I launched my first company in 2008. I was still out of status then.
Now, okay. So you said that that was exporting
heavy equipment.
Yeah. How on earth, how is that what you end up doing? What, like, was there some connection? Did you know something about that already? How is that?
It started out by, all throughout the years that I was here, I always got friends from overseas that were asking me for help on getting them, you know, you name it. I mean, whether it was a car, whether it was something, you know, very small, like parts, you know, I did that for a while just by, as I had my day job, yep. right? So I was helping them. Even the phone, hey, I got this, can you help us buy this phone? Yeah, I did that. Anyways, it came to a point when I got out of Wall Street, I was definitely looking for stuff to do. I never knew what I was necessarily going to do. Ironically enough, my major in college was finance and international business.
Yeah.
I graduated with a minor in international business. But I just started getting requests from friends and got to a point where I sold a reach stacker. I don't know if you know what that is.
No.
A reach stacker is a kind of like a forklift.
Okay.
That seaports use to lift containers.
Yeah, okay.
Right. It was a $300,000 sale for me. And at that point I realized that, you know what? I can actually make a business out of this.
Yeah.
And I had made a lot of contacts. I had developed a lot of contacts just by looking for stuff on heavy equipment side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how I started it. Wow. My very first commission check, $30,000, I created the first company. That's how I did it. And I did that for about 2 years, paying the bills, the family, absolutely. And in 2010, when I got, or late 20, 2010, or late 2018, 29, I'm sorry, 2009, I got the green card, and I, because I had been away from home for so many, many years, I went back home, and that's a different chapter. That's the period then I went there, through connections, I was able to go back to the finance side again, because I was offered an opportunity to go back to banking, because this bank was putting together a real estate investment fund, and because of my Wall Street background, I was invited to go back to banking in my home country of Angola, which again I took.
So did this have, just curious, because you said that dad was working with banks and worked his way up in a bank, are these connected at all?
I tell you that, ironically, yes, it was not intended, never intentional, none whatsoever. It's so funny that at some point I ran into this gentleman that knew my dad, was actually a former colleague of my dad. My dad had been long retired at that point, right? But when I started banking there, we ran into this coffee shop for breakfast, and he did say this, wow, look at how ironic, your dad was a banker, I work with him, and look at you, young generation, now you are working in banking and I'm working with you. I stopped for a minute. Again, this was nothing related. My dad had no intervention whatsoever.
Yeah.
But it just so happened it just so happened to be. And at that point, I did actually told the gentleman was that you know what? I don't know how big of a coincidence this is, but I don't believe this is going to be the rest of my life. The rest of my professional life.
Yeah.
I kind of felt that way.
So you were back there for a few years?
I was back there for 3 years nonstop. Yeah, 3 years. So I was basically commuting between my Luanda, the capital, my capital city, or the capital city of my home country.
Yep.
I was commuting between Luanda and Florida because at that point, my wife stayed here.
I was gonna
say,
how is your wife putting up with this crap?
I don't know. I don't know.
So you're in New York, so yeah. Get your ass back here. Right. You come back for a minute.
Yeah, I stayed for 2 years and then I'm out again.
Oh my gosh.
I tell you that, believe it or not, she really was, strong. And she knew what she wanted it. I've always knew what I wanted it. Well, I think I did.
She was
I
pretty did. Supportive she of the pretty, second move.
Not really.
No.
No.
Okay.
Oh, my God. It was very contentious.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine. Like, yeah. Get back here. Yeah. You got back. We got married. Yeah. We're straight. We're finally together in O-Town. Oh, where are you going?
Yeah. But I felt that at the time, it was a very good financial decision for the family.
Yeah.
Because, yes, I had the business. I did. I had SOS Universal. But for a period of 2 years, income was never necessarily recurring, mm-hmm. right? So it was good actually. Every time we made a commission was like, 10 grand, 30 grand.
You just gotta get those.
Yeah,
it's but like you feast and famine exactly, kind of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So in between those, it was really hustle because I never knew exactly when the next one is gonna come.
Yeah.
Right. And we had to do a lot of financial constraints on us and the kids, and she wanted to go back to school and the whole nine mm-hmm. yards. So when I got this opportunity, of course, to go back home. It was going to be steady income.
So the opportunity to go, it wasn't just visit home, it was a job opportunity.
Well, actually, no. I went there because I went there to close a deal.
Mm-hmm.
When I went there...
For the business.
For the business, yes.
Yeah.
Through my contacts, I was working on a cement deal.
Mm-hmm.
That never went through. I went there, I took a executive from a firm out of South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I was here in the Lakeland, Tampa Bay area. I flew to Luanda. He went there to meet me there. We sat down with the intended buyer, but the deal never went through.
Mm.
So, and that was going to be the biggest money. That was going to be the deal that would make us, right? So when that didn't happen, I was a little bit discouraged. And I got the opportunity to sit down with the CEO of the bank then, and he offered me the position.
Mm.
I was going there for 3 weeks. I ended up staying for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Not lying to you, because it had been many, many years since then, over a decade or so. Yeah, my wife again, she never liked it, but I came back and I told her, hey, I got this offer. I'm coming back just to pack. So you know what? We're gonna talk when you get here.
That's after 3 months.
That's after 3 months.
And then you went for 3 years.
And then I went for 3 years. Yeah. I was seeing at some point actually I was seeing my family twice a year.
Oof.
For about 2-3 weeks the most.
Yeah.
So I did that for 3 years. I endured that for 3 years, but I was paying the dues to keep the company here back in the States operational, or I mean legit, right? Basically,
keeping the filings.
Yep. Yep, I was doing all that. And while I was there, I was looking for business to do it on the side, mm-hmm. From banking. Yes, I was doing that. And believe it or not, that's when I was there. That's when the opportunity came for us to work with food at that point.
Interesting.
Came across the supermarket in Angola that was looking for caviar. And
because they knew I had contacts that were there. They knew what I was doing. I mean, that I was based in the States, right? Had a company there. They've approached me, and I found this company in New York that was that had the product and wanted to not only explore that opportunity for that sale, but they told me then, hey, if you ever want it, we don't have any distribution anywhere in Angola or in Africa. If you want, you can work with our brand wherever you can find mm-hmm. distribution. I never paid much attention to it. And then I came back to the States. So after 3 years, got done with the banking, came back. My wife was then, you know what? Believe it or not, steady income, right? I came back. When I gave up the banking opportunity, my wife was mad. Because she was not happy with the fact that, okay, here you are again. You have, for 3 years, we have steady income. We don't have to worry. But now you're going back to entrepreneurship again.
Peace and family. And
exactly. I was missing my family, but she was looking at the financial aspect.
Checks are coming in, though.
Dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I restarted again from scratch, and I was focusing on food. That's where I shift the focus on food.
Now, when was this?
This was in 2014.
Now, is this the company as is today, or this is an earlier iteration?
No, this was an early iteration.
Yep.
I was from 2014 to 2018, we were focusing on, we were buying products from companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, Unilever, name it, those distributors. And we were finding distribution for those in whatever we could, a little bit of a small margin in Africa, Middle East, and Asia. This is where I learned my tuition. This is where I actually paid my tuition. This is where I learned the business. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to my purpose that I had no direct relationship with any of them, right? I started to realize that I could scale this business if I had direct relationships with the brands.
Yeah.
And I understood that the emerging brands are the ones that need that kind of distribution.
That are open to those kind of relationships.
Exactly, yep, because right. The Coca-Colas, they already have their own supply chain, distribution channels. So started conceptualizing the idea in late 2018. Signed our first official distribution agreement in November, a few days after Thanksgiving, November of 2018. With the first emerging brand, it is an ice cream brand that is still with us today. And from then on, it was building the idea, conceptualizing. And in 2020, that's when I incorporated what it is today, Bulky Trade. So 2020. Yes, I built I was proving the concept in 2019.
Yeah.
In 2020, I created Bulky Trade. I was still doing the service sides on SOS Universal. I kept SOS Universal. And in 2020, that's when I started then figuring it out how to build this in a bigger scale.
So for 14 to 18,
yeah.
When you switched over to kind of some of the food distribution stuff, learning the business, that was still SOS.
That was still SOS.
You just weren't doing the heavy equipment. You just exporting a different thing.
That's correct.
And so you're, buying product, taking it to other markets and selling it,
yep.
More or less, trying to get some sort of a market. When I was in high school, I bought Bubble Yum,
yep.
And I broke the packs apart and I sold them in class.
Yep.
Right? It's, yeah.
I was a food broker, per se.
Yeah.
That's okay. What SOS was.
Okay, food broker.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now why the new company, like what, I don't understand the world enough to say I understand why the new company's not, like why are you not SOS still? Why do you need to like incorporated a new entity, and what's the logic there to make this move?
I love it. I love the question. SOS was structured as an LLC,
mm-hmm.
50
50% owned by my wife and my, well, 50-50, my wife and myself.
Okay.
Right? SOS, if I wanted to keep it that way, would definitely become a sensational lifestyle business.
But you could take so you're structuring this so you're just like, we could take investment and grow exactly. up a real business.
Yes.
Yeah. That makes perfect
sense. That's what Bulky Trade is. Bulky Trade is a Delaware C Corp.
Okay.
Our goal with Bulky Trade is to build, this is a technology company, right? That's what Bulky Trade is. Bulky Trade is a technology company that is right now focusing on, I mean, based on my learnings of international distribution, we're building this as a B2B marketplace to enable emerging brands to do international distribution from any country to any country. Mm. It doesn't matter where the product is coming from to where it's going to. And the only way to be able to do that is to leverage the technology that we are building, basically, right? So ultimately our goal with Bulky Trade is to take this company public. Is to grow the business and to take the company public, let's say, right?
Yep.
I'm not going to lie to you. I cannot guarantee that that's what's going to happen.
Of course.
But I can guarantee that that's exactly what we are working to do to accomplish every single day.
Yep.
And that's our focus. You know, we got to develop the technology to a point where this is scalable, regardless of not only the geography, but the industry at some point. This is an international distribution platform. That's what it is.
Now, okay, so let me having not like, this is kind of introductory, right? So, so familiarity with marketplaces. You've got buyers, you've got sellers. You've told me that you've got emerging brands. So let's say I've got a little you used ice cream. Let's say I got a little ice cream shop or the caviar. I've got a dope caviar product, whatever, and I want this to be available in countries throughout the world. And then let's say on the other side of the marketplace, did you say it was Luanda? Is that
Luanda?
The, yeah.
Luanda
so
is the capital
city. Let's
say
I have a market in Luanda, and mm-hmm. I'm going, hey man, I want some ice cream, I want some caviar. There's some products that we really, you know, we could really move here. There's some new restaurants opening up, there's some things we could really supply to here, but we don't have the supply chain for that, so we're going to come into this marketplace, and then we can see these emerging brand products from around the world, or mm-hmm. mainly from the United States. These are emerging brands from United States.
Right now, we're focusing our attention on American brands out.
Product U.S.
Right.
Marketplace Asia, Africa,
Middle East. That's our focus.
Yep.
Though we're making the first inroads into countries in Latin America. We have interest from countries like Brazil. And that's probably as far as we will go for now. The reason for that, and that's very simple, is that we want to first develop the technology. We want to actually first learn from the existing context that we already have.
Yep.
Prove the technology, not prove the concept. The concept is already proven.
Solid, yeah.
Right. It's just prove the technology, build the features to allow any supermarket chain in these markets to exactly find the products, buy it through 2-3 clicks, and we will deliver.
Yep.
To wherever it may go. Over time, we will then open to, yes, in other geographies. It's taking products from, it doesn't matter where the product is coming from. It could be coming from Angola, Luanda, right? A manufacturer, a brand, a local brand that is looking for international markets. We will allow them access, of course, at the same time, and the same distribution channels. It could be product coming to the U.S. It could actually be product going to Portugal,
yeah.
Right? It's just the technology that will enable us to be able to be present on all sorts of it.
Now, when you say we will deliver, are you still doing the physical exporting? Are you doing freight or something like that? Or are you...
We don't do that ourselves. We don't need to do that ourselves. That. Yes. Yeah. There's the way that we are structuring the technology is we're basing our strategy and I will say yeah and tech ideas on a little bit what Uber does, right? Mm-hmm. Uber doesn't own the cars. Uber doesn't own any of the infrastructure that they touch, right? That's exactly what we are doing. There's already enough infrastructure in the world when it comes to all the different aspects that we're going to need to pick up a product from a manufacturing plant.
Just bridging that relational
exactly.
gap.
Exactly. Right. Taking it all the way up to a supermarket shelf. Whether we're talking about warehouses, independent warehouses that are already existing, we're bringing that into our system, and all we need is their data. Location, address, have those contacts, basically, and contracts so we can move products when needed to those locations. It's the trucking companies, eventually, that are based on their different geographies. Right, build that into the system so when an order comes in, we know exactly who we're going to use. If we need to use a warehouse, we use the warehouse. But if it can go from the warehouse, manufacturing plant to the port, the trucking company automatically will do the move based on who are the trucking companies in that area, in that region. So, and from then on, is utilizing the vessels, the airplanes that are already out there with all the biggest companies that we know. We're not going to own any of that. We don't need to focus on buying vessels, good, buying planes, none of that. There's already enough there. So it's just bringing all this infrastructure into one place using aggregation theory principles.
Now you reference yourself as like it's a tech company, you said a non-technical founder. So you've told your story enough that I think we're tracking with that. We're going, okay, cool. So we like I know exporting and finance and I'm an entrepreneurial guy, build business, and then you go, okay, I see this need. Like maybe it first occurred to me with a caviar request. And then we started moving food. And then I started going, man, there's serious opportunity here. There's so many products that aren't in these different markets. And so you see the opportunity emerging. Walk me through the like move that is like, I don't know, the conceptualization of this solution. Mm-hmm. And then how do you, without the technical skills, like build to this place?
Great question. I mean, 2014 to 2018 were learning years, right? Mm-hmm. And learning years, because we were interacting with both sides of the marketplace, we understood what their needs are, right? Mm-hmm. What their pain points are, what we could do to solve and address and easily solve those pain points. So we built the technology, and I built the technology, well, let me put it this way. I didn't build the technology. I found, I put together a team, a young team of two young developers to build the technology to the point where it's at today. And this is based on all the interactions and the conversations and the feedback that we've been getting from both sides of the marketplace, right? For both sides of the, when I say the marketplace, of course, the website.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Yeah.
So, and you don't have to answer this, and we don't have to get into the details of stuff like this, but I am just curious. When you have an idea and you want to get this thing up and running, and you find these two, you build this team, mm-hmm. My guess is that you offer these developers something like equity for where you're not like, you haven't been able to raise them. Correct? So you're like, hey, you want a piece of this? Let's go. Let's build. Okay. Just to be clear, keep going.
Yeah.
But I'm like, just for those listening, like, how did you? Okay. Right.
Yeah.
They believe there is a real product here.
Yeah.
They have the chops to maybe build it. and they start building the both sides of the marketplace.
That is the idea as we are now building the team out.
Yep.
Based on my success, what I was able to prove as a viable business up until 2020, between 2020 and 2022, we have existing sales. We got to a point where we had about, without having any technology whatsoever, okay? Even without the product.
Just you on the phone.
Just me on the phone. Yeah. Yes.
You want it? I got
emails.
It. Let's get it.
Exactly. Knocking on doors.
Yep.
We got to work with about 70 plus brands, almost 5,000 SKUs. Okay.
Really?
So, yes. And got to a point where overall, I've sold over the years between $3 and $4 million worth of products, about that, right? So, I was able to raise a little bit of money from family and friends.
Yep.
With that money, I utilized to pay the developers that I brought in to build the system based on the features that I understood, and I was getting feedback from my clients as to what was needed. So the technology evolved to a point right now, and what we launched actually in September of last year, and we were fixing bugs until December. What we launched in December of last year, it's a product that as of now is not fully complete MVP, but allows the demand, which are the supermarket chains, to actually log in, create a profile, log in, go through, sort through our inventory and submit us the purchase order, right? So we built the MVP up until this point. Next iteration of the product or the next iterations of the product, we will build the payment side of it.
Mm-hmm.
We will integrate that with a payment solution, very well known. We are going then to incorporate the logistics component of the technology. And for that, to be honest with you, I was able to attract now, tech talent that understands actually what they are doing, what the technology needs to be built is.
That's awesome.
Brought in a CTO.
Good.
That's the type of person that will go on an equity plan.
Yep.
And this was in January of 2023. Today's March 1st,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're just getting going in March.
There you go.
Right, yeah.
Last month, we just brought in a lead developer.
Okay.
That is also going to come on a equity-based compensation. And we are going to build the rest of the MVP on that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few more, and we have a few more interested parties that are, or let's say, developers and engineers that are like what we are doing and want to come out and help, be a part of it, and of course take equity on the business. And that's how we're going to grow.
It's amazing.
That's how we're going to grow. I don't know enough, and I don't know, to be honest with you, how to code a single line to save my soul.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to put together the engineers that know exactly how to go about it to develop this technology. And that's how we're going to grow.
That's amazing.
The next step is what we are focusing on. Is to raise our pre-seed round.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to raise at least $1 million or a little bit more to be able to formalize the team, right? We're thinking that we are going to need somewhere around between 3 and 5 developers, and we want to build this in-house. We will continue to build this in-house.
Yep.
And of course, we have to compensate
the talent. We don't want to compromise on quality. We don't want to compromise on, our ability to actually build a good product. So the investment that we are, the investment opportunity that we're giving out, that we are offering to investors is exactly that. Be a part of it. Come and support us, because we have launched, again, as I mentioned, in December, we are now with about 23 brands already up and running. We have almost 500 SKUs, and we are adding products. We are adding products on a constant basis. I mean, on a weekly basis, I would say. We need to get the product to a point where it self-sustains itself. It self-generate leads. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
But we just getting started in December anyways, yeah, right?
Seriously.
And and most of what I was doing, pretty much everything. I was project manager on the technical side. I was trying to generate these. I was trying to bring these brands in. I was looking for sales. Now, I can say that I don't have to worry about the technical part anymore.
Yeah.
Because I just have to. I'll be there. I'll oversee it. I'll be present every day, but I don't have to make those calls. I don't have to make those decisions. And now I can focus on growing the business.
That's amazing, man.
Which is what we are here to do.
Gosh, that's so beautiful, man. Good work. Good work, dude. I'm super excited about, and I'm so grateful that we got you at this point in time to come on and kind of share your story.
Thank you.
Yeah, for those listening, I mean, this dude's not going to be too hard to get a hold of, right? If people were trying to reach out or get in touch, if there were people that wanted to invest or developers that wanted to reach out, is there how should people get in touch?
Yeah, I mean, we and that's one of the beauties of what we're doing. I mean, when I started out this project, or when I started out concepting Bulky Trade as it is today, I was building this on a silo by myself at home, right? From my home office. From that point on, a little bit before 2020 until now, we've gotten validation. We've gotten validation from accredited institutions such as Embark Collective.
Yep.
We are a member. We are an Embark Collective here in the Tampa Bay area.
That's where I met you.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That's what we. Yeah, yep. Exactly. You're right. We are building our company out of there. Bulky Trade, which is Bulk, B-U-L-K. I trade, right? Bulky Trade. I use an I for international. It's Bulk International Trade.
Boom.
Bulky Trade, right? BulkyTrade.com. It's our domain. We're building this out of Tampa Bay. We're just getting started, and I don't anticipate that our presence will dwindle at any point. Mm-hmm. It's only gonna go up. And that's exactly what we're after. I mean, at some point, yes, talent. Any other kind of local support, for instance, on the local side, one of the things that we really wanna help out. Local manufacturers, right? Mm. Who is manufacturing products and building a CPG brand, a consumer product good, retail-ready products in the community, in the region, that is looking for international distribution? We really want it.
Yeah.
We want to help those communities. We want to help the community find international opportunities for their brands, for their products, and of course, with that, we are going to help out the local community develop and expand, because we are growing their sales, right?
Yeah.
We are, tomorrow, I actually have a meeting with the Hillsborough County Business Development Division, to bring this opportunity to, any manufacturer out there right now, food and beverage space, retail ready, that has a brand that already has international that already has domestic retail distribution and has in industrial manufacturing capacity, we really wanna partner with those brands. So that's on one side. And of course, over time, we're going to build up on the supporting services, meaning the warehouses, the trucking companies. Eventually, we will start in a little bit when the technology is a little bit more advanced. We will build up on that as well. But right now, you know, it's definitely aside from the supply side, where we need the brands, we really need to be capitalized, and we are expanding this opportunity to, you know, anybody that wanna can help us strengthen this financially. Not anybody, but I mean investors. We're looking for VCs. That's what we are.
Yeah, of course.
That's what
we
are to do.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, man. In the time we have left, I'm gonna throw you some other questions if you're good to kind of pivot a little bit. When I met you, you had a few kids with you.
Yeah.
How many kids do you have now?
I have three boys.
Three boys.
21, 18, and 15.
21, 18, and 15. So, a couple of them, probably even old enough that, like, so here's the thing. So, I asked you earlier about your earliest memories of work.
Yeah.
And let's say, I mean, for a few of them, it could be just a couple years down the road. Let's say I run into them and go, man, this dude's hustling. This dude got some really good stuff going on. Why don't I have you come on the show? And let's say I'm interviewing your boys.
Yeah.
Any of them, all of them, you could go through one at a time or whatever. But like, and I ask them, about their own understanding of their relationship with work, their mm-hmm. earliest memories of work. What might they tell me?
I tell you what. It depends on what kind of work, meaning.
Okay.
If we're talking about chores, helping at home, they will totally tell you that I am the laziest guy out there.
Okay, all right.
And probably so will my wife. She will probably say the same. But I do believe that when it comes to professional work, I strongly believe that my kids, well, actually, let me put it this way. Not that I strongly believe. They prove me every day. Mm. Then they through different means, different ways, that they are watching what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I felt was extremely fundamental and important to do, I spoke with my wife, and we sat them down. We set the kids down and we've explained exactly what we were doing. We've explained what bulky trade is,
yep.
what bulky trade wants to become, and how is that going to impact not only mom, dad, and themselves, but potentially future generations.
Yeah.
So we've explained to them that it is a tough, tough, very tough process. And I think they've seen it. They are seeing it, and I think that they are valuing the lessons that we are sharing with them. We've had some tough years.
Yeah,
we've had some rough patches out there, but we've endured. I think that they are definitely learning from it. And I see that, believe it or not, my kids, even yesterday, my 15-year-old son is upset because he really wants to work at Publix part-time, but Publix is not taking anybody until they're 16 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. At least in my area, they're not, okay. Right? And he wants to just be a bagger, and he can't, so he's mad at Publix, but he found a solution that, you know what, I'm going to find a part-time somewhere else. So I got a part-time interview with Chick-fil-A. Okay, right? My middle son is he wants to study civil engineer.
Mm.
During the day, He goes to school remote. He's going to community college remote, boosting his credits, so he transferred to UCF in the fall. Until then, during the day, in the morning, he is going to a, internship, sorry, apologize. He's taking an internship at a civil engineer firm in the morning. He goes there from 8 o'clock in the morning till noon. From 2 to later on, he works at Publix because he wants to buy his own computer. He built his own computer, paid out of his own pocket. He wants to buy his own car. He wants to buy a car that he can work on it because he's a hands-on kind of a guy. I don't know where he got it from because I don't do none of that. But anyway, and I see the determination.
That's amazing.
I see the go-getting. Yeah. My oldest son, same thing. He's probably a little bit lazier than the other two. Yeah, but again, I guess he's the first. We kind of spoiled him a little bit.
Laid back.
I like that back. Laid back. Yeah, but he's a phenomenal writer. He wants to be a journalist, and he got gigs with ESPN. He's got gigs with. He's working with that app that has him write soccer articles, and he's got awards on that. Basically,
it's incredible.
So I see the determination on them, and I see that I think we are teaching them something about life, which I think that they are using it.
No, and I know even the event that we were at, you had kids out with you because you're like bringing them out to show. I forget exactly the event we were at, but I mean, I know it was at Embark. It was something related to some entrepreneurship or whatever.
Right. And that's the thing that I feel that it's very important for them to not only hear from me. I like to every time I have the opportunity to bring them into Embark environment or any business setting, I try to do that so they can understand that it's not just dad trying to do this. There's a whole lot of people, they can learn. And I believe you can say that they know how to behave. They know how to move around.
They were awesome.
Right.
Yeah, I thought they were awesome. I enjoyed talking to them.
It's important.
And you know, you even referenced like your dad taking you places when you were quite young, and actually you said meeting a lot of the people that are actually in the exact industry that you're trying to make connections in today, which is kind of an amazing.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, even from that early thing that your dad, the trade show thing that your dad was taking you to the connection with the bank. To the kind of having your boys with you at these things that you're doing, and the way that this is something's weaving its way down through the generations. So something I try to ask everybody, and maybe this is, how would you define success?
This is a great question. That is definitely a great question. I would probably say that. When I started having this idea about how to build Bulky Trade to become what I really will work every single day to become, excuse me, I'm just getting a little bit emotional here. To become a publicly traded company someday. I don't know if that's what's going to happen. I had this initial conversation with my dad. He was still alive then. This was before. Yeah, this was somewhere around March of 2020. I told him about my dream, right? I told him about what I was seeing. Two or three months after that, he passed away. And I was here in Lakeland. I was here in Tampa Bay area. My dad back home in Angola. I couldn't attend his funeral. And I actually had to set up the Zoom link because it was in the heat of the pandemic. This was in May of 2020. A lot of people couldn't attend. And I was in charge here to set up the Zoom link, and I witnessed my dad being taken to his last resting place through Zoom. I told him what I wanted to accomplish with the company, but my dad comes from an old economy, and he told me, well, do you think, really, are you capable of taking this company public the way you really? That may take a lot of work. And I told him that, I mean, you know what? Only time will tell how much work it will be. But to me, it won't be work at all. The way I look at it, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Right? So how do I define success? I told my dad that I want to take this company public. I want to take this company public. Yeah. I don't know. But that was one of the last conversations I had with him. Mm. So, yeah, I guess success will be when I take this public.
There you go.
I'm not going to say, I don't want to run the risk of saying that if that doesn't happen, it is not success. Mm. But I don't think it will be fully. I don't think it will be plentiful. I don't think it will be the highest level of success that I could probably achieve. Mm. I mean, that's what I promised him. I don't know if that's what's going to happen.
Man. I love it, though. I love the just keeping your eye on the prize, man.
Yeah.
Going the thing that you've fixed your eyes on. And I mean, even as you share, I can feel the kind of weight of going, look, I had one of these final conversations with Dad, and I told him I was going to do something, and damn it, I'm going to see that through.
Yeah. I believe wherever is at that, he's watching. You know, I really will say that I will do everything in my power. I will always do everything in my power to make that a reality, and that's what I will try. Yeah, that's going to be success for me.
I believe you.
Yeah, that's what's going to be. Amen.
So for those listening, I'm curious if there's anything. I mean, we had touched on a little bit of like ways to maybe connect with you guys or with the company. Is there anything in general, whether it's related to the company or just in general, like, do you have any asks or anything for those listening or encouragements?
Well, yeah, I would probably say, you know, encouragements. I would probably go with encouragements because, I mean, the asks are pretty much what we spoke earlier, right? I mean, I'm a guy. Well, let me put it this way: on the asks, I'm a guy that I'm always open to talk and connect.
Yeah.
So definitely, I'm open to any forum you want to put me in. You want to talk about what we're doing? I'm totally fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with that. So yes, because I mean, it's part of getting our name out there, right?
Yeah.
Evangelists, what you doing?
There you go.
I appreciate, thank you for the opportunity to be here, man. This is definitely part of, you know, the type of support that the community can bring to an entrepreneur like me, right? So encouragement, it is probably what I would focus on, meaning, listen, doing what we're doing, doing this is not easy. I mean, trying to build a startup is it's extremely hard.
Yeah.
There's a lot of noise. Mm. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of doubts. There's a lot of sleepless nights.
Yep.
There's a lot of responsibility.
But you really gotta just pick up every day and take it as a new one. It's not gonna be linear. It's never gonna be linear. And it's and by all means, do not anticipate that things should just happen to you. Meaning, like, things will come to you. No, you have to go get it.
Yep.
You have to go get it. And you're going to need to be... I was a stockbroker. I used to make 200 calls a day easy and getting slammed with no's.
Yep.
Right? So you have to get used to that. You have to get used to hearing no and continue. Just keep going. Keep going. It doesn't matter whether you're building a company or whether you are building a charity. It doesn't matter whether you're building a church, whether you are building a small business. If you have passion, you do have that passion for that you are working on, stay at it. Try. And I mean,
it's good.
You know, just stay the course. Stay the course and find ways to solve adversities. And believe me, that you'll see that the next day will be different than yesterday.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. Just stay on it.
Mauro, man, thank you so much for taking the time to come share your story. I can't wait to share this with everybody. I just appreciate your work, and I look forward to tracking with your company, tracking with your story, and watching from here to public, man. I'm ecstatic to know you and to walk with you guys.
John, I really appreciate the opportunity, man. I really do. This means the world. This is the first time. I think this is probably the first conversation that I'm having. This is the very first podcast I do, to be honest with you. And I love. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah.
I know we connected sometime last year.
Yeah.
We
took us a minute.
It took us a minute.
Well, and then we had the mishap with recording. And I was like, I think I texted you. I was like, this is starting to feel like a really important podcast. And the reason was all the friction. Like, we couldn't get the date right. Yes. And then I didn't record it. I felt like an idiot. And I was like, oh my God. Just make it happen.
Yeah.
Just stay determined. Just make this thing happen.
There you go.
And here we are.
Yeah, no. So I appreciate you. Allowing me to come into your space, share my story. And definitely, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about Bulky Trade and my story.
I love it, man. Really, it's such a good story.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.